Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
What's up, my people? Welcome back to another episode of Huey Off the Record. It's good to be back hanging with you here on the social medias. Now, check me out Friday nights over on my Facebook page at Huey Morgan Official, where I go live for a little back and forth with you. I answer some questions. I tell you what's up in my week, and I hope you guys are doing good as well. So, on to today's guest. I hope your ears and your brain are warmed up and ready because this guy does not miss a beat. It's 4 to 5 minutes of high intensity action and strong opinions. Now, if you consider yourself, very liberal and touchy and offended easily, you might want to put a little cotton wool in your ears. It's kind of real what we're saying, but not too much. It's, you know, but seriously, it's all about hearing the kinds of views and opinions and listening. Maybe actually learning something when you usually shout people down. And maybe you will. You know, that's the idea. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Big Phil Campion, a veteran of military operations in every conflict zone all around the world, both as a soldier in the regular armed forces, as an elite operator as well in the 22nd SAS Regiment, and also as a mercenary. He's now an author of 4 books. Including his biography of his time as a military operator, Born Fearless, as well as 2 novels and an SAS Everyday Survival Guide, which most people do need. He's also the brains and the muscle behind the Remembrance Rumble. It's a charity boxing match that sees SAS guys take on Navy SEALs, Recon Marines, Green Berets, you know, Special Forces guys from America. And it's going off November 11th in London. Google it. Get your tickets. It's an amazing cause, and it's a serious rumble, too. And as a Marine veteran, we go all over the map on this one, putting the world to rights like only 2 vets can do. You'll also hear a little bit from Phil's wife, Wendy, who steps in because that's what happens. So check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Try to keep up. Big Phil Campion, y'all. So what I do is I usually do an intro. So you've already been intro, Big Phil. And Wendy's here just making sure you're the lawyer.
Yeah, she's the nuts and bolts of it, yeah.
Well, I wanted to start off because we want to talk about the Remembrance Rumble, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. So tell me about the whole origins of that and what it's about.
The whole thing went back down to me, basically, a couple of years ago. I'd done a little bit of training. I was on a job in Israel. Mm-hmm. And I was out there and I was training a little bit, doing a little bit of boxing, and boxing's always interested me, mm-hmm. but I've never had time to do it with my career, etc. I've never had time. And I got to that stage where I've talked about it all my life, done all the training, hit the pads, all that sort of stuff, and never been through the ropes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think to myself, you, sir, are a prize plum, do you know what I mean? You're just talking about it at the moment. So I set about sort of like, I announced to people that I was gonna have a fight, like, do you know what I mean? I thought, I'm looking for someone to fight now. And all I got coming through the door was either people that had like 50 pro bouts and were absolutely nails boxers, like ninja boxers, like, do you know what I mean? And that was about it, because everybody else just thought, am I going to fight the man, SAS man? No, you're not, because I don't want to. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, the reputation of the cat-based precedes you a little bit, you know what I mean? So it was difficult to find a match. So my mate, Rob Paxman, we was pissed up one night, we were drinking, and I mentioned
my wife's English, I get all the lingo.
Yeah. So we're drinking away. I'm always trying to put it in, fag, you know what I mean? Yeah. So we're drinking away, and somebody, it was at McDowell, wasn't it? And he's sort of like, he's one of these geezers who would never have a fight himself, but if he could make 2 other people fight, he'd have it. Phil, didn't you say you wanted to fight? Rob, you're quite hard, didn't you? Like, oh, right, okay. I said, yeah, if you want it, Rob, I'll have it. And Rob said, yes. Cool. So that was it. So we organised the first one. And it was a good show. Made a good money for charity. Declared it. I got myself on someone else's card. But we topped the bill. It was brilliant. You know what I mean? 2 SAS men going at it. And at the end of it, the guy that arranged it, Graham, says to me, he says, how can we top that? I said, well, I don't know. Let me have a think. And then I just came up with this crazy idea. If I could get six ex-SAS and six ex-US Special Forces and bring them together in the ring, we'd have fireworks, wouldn't we?
That'd be a good one, yeah.
You know what I mean? That'd be great, and people would be interested in that, you know? And it would... We have a thing over here called the Army Navy Rugby, which is Twickenham every year.
Yeah, we do Army Navy Rugby.
Yeah, and that attracts 80,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. All right, that's a big thing. And I thought if I could do something that it's not so much about. No, I don't give a shit about rugby. I hate rugby. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I go to the Army Rugby every year and get absolutely stinking. All right, and do you know what I mean? And I thought if I could replicate that, even if people don't like boxing, you know, we've got all the other stuff there for you: a bit of charity, a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of awareness for all these different charities and troops and veterans and all the rest of it. I thought, right, if I could do that every year, it'd be great. And this year's the second year, and hopefully it'll go as well as last year. And next year we'll continue it. You know?
Last year I heard a lot about last year, and you know, being a Marine, we always make fun of the Navy, and but we're in the Department of the Navy,
so it's
kind of like one of those inter-service rivalry kind of things. And I remember when I was first going to jump school, I went through with a corpsman who was in the Navy who went through Bud SEAL training, right? And
okay.
He was telling the story about Colonel Sterling.
He's the founder of David Sterling. Yeah.
And then they were telling me that pretty much every other Special Forces regiment around the world was based on you guys, right?
Yeah, more or less.
Oh, yes, thank you very much. We're not drinking martinis, although we should be.
We could do it, shaken, not stirred. Is that
still water, sir?
I'll have sparkling, please.
Yeah, I'll have sparkling as well, please.
Still, please. Women first.
So what I thought was interesting with that was pretty much you guys pretty much wrote the book.
Yeah, they pioneered it. That was the ethos that David Stern wrote was the cornerstone of Special Forces as we know them today, really.
And for a lot of reasons, and for, you know, for the ones I just mentioned, all the American Special Forces guys end up coming to Hereford for a minute. If like I guess the officers do when they cross train around the world.
There, so. You know, they come over in my time there. You know, I cross pollinated with Delta, with SEAL teams. You know, all the time, and it's good. And this was another thing behind the rumble as well, because everything we do hand in glove with the Americans, apart from our aftercare for our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, look, you know, you people over there are getting it seriously right, and we get some things right here, but if I could bring the whole thing together and we could, you know, start emulating what you do over there, then it was a good thing, you know?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that, because, I mean, the thing is, it's a brotherhood, people who've served in the Western countries.
Yeah.
We're all friends. I mean, I got friends of Royal Marines, I got a couple friends in the 22nd, you know, I got friends that are in the Army, too.
Yeah, of course, Chef.
Yeah, I mean, in America as well. And I think that's kind of like, it's almost, I want to say a club, but it's not a club that's exclusive to people who have joined, but it's almost like a mindset. We understand, and I wanted to ask you a question about that, but I did want to talk about the rumbles. Now, how many fights are there?
There'll be five. I've got five planned this year, but there may be six. So
okay.
It depends what brand I can get. I can muster six fighters if I need be, but I think at the moment it's five, because...
Are the opponents going to be Navy SEAL guys?
They're all. I've got Recon Marines.
Okay.
I've got a mix of this time, but they've all got some tie to the SF world.
Right, cool.
So I'm fighting the same guy I fought last year, John Snyder.
How'd you do last year?
Yeah, we're pretty well matched. It'd be a good tear up this year.
I've seen you training on social media. I'm like, I don't want to get wearing this dude.
I hope he's been training.
Now, when I mentioned earlier, like, it's almost like the political class. I noticed in the UK, because I live here a lot of the time.
Yeah.
My wife's English. My kid's born here. That they don't really, they almost forget about the military contribution.
Yeah, massively. When it's not in your face, when there's not images coming back on the television. You know, there's guys now in serious trouble, you know, mind injuries, limbless, etc., etc., etc. Can't see, can't do this, can't do that, can't do the other. And because there's nothing being rammed down our throats in the mainstream media, it's like they've almost been sidelined.
Yeah.
And this, for me, is just another thing. It's like spinning plates. Right, let's spin the plate. Let's get them up there again. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm trying to do with it. It's just keep it rolling over. Make it a yearly event, you know?
Now, why do you think... Especially in the UK, it's a smaller country than the US. The US has the Veterans Administration that's been kind of screwed up in the past, but they're starting to get the wheels spinning on that and making it kind of work for the vets. I mean, is the veterans care over here better? Or
we've got two things going on over here at the moment. We've got half the country don't care, for a start. They couldn't give a shit. If you look at people like Jeremy Corbyn in the Labour Party, who's the main opposition and could be Prime Minister of this country soon, he does not give one flying single fuck about the
troops. He'll be commanding... The UK,
he just does not care. You know, he's a proven past of collaborating with people with terrorist organisations. Mm. He doesn't care. He has a large following who do not care, who blame the wars on the British and the Americans, and you know this, that, and the other. So you've got a vast majority of people in the country, sadly enough, who don't care. All right, and then you've got the other people who don't want to know. We've got let's bend ourselves to this because this is fucking awful and I don't want to see this, this is terrible, but it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, and they just crack on with their laughs like a blinkered horse. And then you got the rest of us who do care and are trying to do something about it, and you know, and are trying to raise awareness and pull the blinkers off those other people and change the minds of those blithering idiots who couldn't give a shit who we stood up for in the first place.
That's the thing that kind of blows my mind. Remember that movie A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson? You can't handle the truth.
It's the same thing, isn't it? It's the same thing. Sit down and listen to Big Phil for 5 minutes and I'll put you straight, right? Or I'll at least put you on the road to being straight.
Well, I mean, just the fact that a lot of people don't want to listen to opinions that aren't exactly their own. They like being in this echo chamber. And it's like,
and look at this thing with Brexit, right? So you look at Brexit and you go, right, okay, Brexit won. Whether you voted in or you voted out, the people wanted to get
it's
out.
Happening,
they
man,
won,
yeah.
right? They won. So shut up, get with the program, get behind them, and let's make the best of it. And I've always said, if you get dealt a fucking shit sandwich in life, get some ketchup on it and choke it down. Do you know what I mean? Because it ain't going to taste good, but it's going to smell worse if you leave it there. Do you know what I mean? So get it on. Get the thing in you, all right? And these people refuse to do it. And what do? They're straight out on the streets, they're smashing the place up. It's like, no. No, look, majority decision. Run with it. Because if it had gone the other way, they'd have expected you to go.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Without all the bullshit, you know.
Without all the stuff.
It seems like a lot of times, especially, I mean, from a perspective of being an American guy and seeing how Brexit was kind of, it was done. It's a lot like the election in the United States with Trump winning, where, you know, if it was the opposite way and Hillary Clinton had not won the popular vote but won the Electoral College, which is the way we elect presidents over there, everybody would be like, yo, suck it up, man. And then if you try to mention that to somebody over here, like, but, you know, but Brexit was like 52%. That's not a majority. Actually, it is a majority.
More people said that than said that. So get on with it. Do you know what I mean? And that's why we have a vote. Or just break the whole thing down and we'll have anarchy.
Do they seem like they're dragging their feet every time I pick up a newspaper or look on the TV?
I've called it a cake and eat it syndrome at the moment, because they're dragging their feet so hard that they've almost stopped the whole process. So they've almost sort of like, right, we're not having it. Nor are you.
I was under the impression, and I think I'm right, where the United Kingdom is much more important to global commerce than Europe. And the fact that when Brexit was established, when the people of this country said, hey, look, we're going to be doing Brexit, instead of taking the back foot and going, hey, you know, Europe, we really want to break up with you nicely, just be like, hey, we're breaking up with you, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be quick. And then you have to pretty much do what we say, we're the larger economy. And then it seems like, you know, France, Germany, and this guy Juncker, where's he from? That guy's an idiot.
He's just threatening
everybody like he's Khrushchev or something.
Yeah,
it's nuts,
exactly.
Man.
Even more reason for us to pull out, you know what I mean? Let's get out of there while we can.
I'd sooner
forge allegiances your way than what I would their way, do you know what I mean?
Well, it seems a lot of times where, if you look at it, just like an interpersonal breakup, like if you have a girlfriend, you're breaking up with her, you wouldn't string it along like this for two years or something.
Exactly.
You're just hurting yourself, man.
It's the cake and eat it thing, isn't it? They want this, but they want that, and they want it all together. So what, you know?
I think that kind of, what you're talking about, people who just don't care, I just don't think they were given the right information. It seems like they have, like, one avenue of information that they receive, like be it mainstream media, which is obviously very biased, and it seems like they accept that as gospel. But anything else is propaganda, right wing, left wing.
That's what they're being told. My son's just passed out in the military as an officer, which is a big deal. You know, he went to sound, he's done the course. I'm really happy with him. I sat behind a girl in a church service who didn't know the national anthem. Where are you coming from? Do you know what I mean? This is the cornerstone of our country, whether you agree with it or not. That is what you're all about. Do you know what I mean? This is your country, my country, our country.
And this
sort of attitude of the abandonment of this country, in order to achieve what I don't know, it's just shocking nowadays. You know.
I was looking at this thing. This is a meme. You know, these funny memes that come up on the internet. It says a generation taught to hate the country will refuse to defend it as well. Now that struck me as like, oh man, that's pretty much. And you know, as far as being succinct on the internet, that never happens. People aren't really, really to the point on the internet. But I thought this was really to the point.
Yeah.
And now, this is probably having to do with like the NFL in America or some shit. I'm not too sure, but I think it kind of transcends a lot of things in this country as well. I mean, if people are taught not to learn the national anthem, if they're taught that their country has done nothing but crazy empirical bullshit over the last couple thousand years, it doesn't instill any sense of national pride. I'm not talking about being a nationalist or anything.
If you don't
like
care about something, it's easy to give it away.
Exactly.
And we are giving this country away. Mm-hmm. We're throwing it away, in fact. Do you know what I mean? It's like we can't wait to get rid of it.
But it seems like it's incrementally, we're being dumbed down, especially like when you see these terrorist attacks. And, you know, the one that really knocked me sideways was that thing up in Manchester with the kids.
Mate. There was absolutely, absolutely. That was the game changer for me, because it went from talking that you actively, and this was a line I said on Sky News, and this was one that had about 20 million hits. You have actively targeted and killed our children.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from that one.
Yeah.
Get away from that. You, and I don't care if you blame it on us going into this country, that country, the other country. The fact is, you're here, you're arrived, and you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now we've got to sort it out.
Yeah.
And there are still people who cannot get their head around that, who want to let these people roam the streets free, who want to not control our borders. It's absolute beggar's belief.
It's beyond my thinking. And I was an enlisted Marine, right? I did a lot of tactical shit. I'm not the big picture guy. I'm not a strategy guy, right?
Yeah.
But to me, it seemed like it happens every single time where they say, yeah, he was known to the authorities. Well, if he was known to the authorities, why wasn't he in fucking jail? Excuse my French. But, you know, why wasn't he in jail?
100%. And this is what I'm saying. And this is what people can't deliver. And every time I mention it, you can't interrupt. Oh, you're a racist!
Well,
no,
racist,
I'm not a racist.
I've got
mixed race grandchildren. I've got a black son-in-law.
Yeah.
I'm not racist. I've served alongside every nationality, creed, colour, sexuality in the world. And I don't care. Mm. And you mentioned race, not me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So shut up. There's two types of people in this world. There's wrong-uns and there's right-uns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid there's a lot of wrong-uns at the moment who need sorting out. So let's get them out of the way.
So why do you think the government doesn't, especially after the thing that happened, why don't they put these guys under... Yeah, they're scared.
They're scared of the majority vote. They're scared of people going, what are you doing that for? They're scared of people going, that's just human rights.
Well,
they're scared of all this bullshit that we've been fed by Europe and all the rest of these left-wing lunatics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're too scared to do anything. You know, you get branded. The minute you say, stop... You're like, whoa, you can't stop that. Why are you stopping that for? You can't arrest someone on suspicion. Well, what the fuck do you arrest them for when it's done?
It's
ridiculous.
It seems like closing the barn door after the horse is
ready. Yeah, let them all out. That's round them up now.
Yeah.
You fucking idiots.
Yeah, that is really, that's kind of crazy.
You're telling me a little swear.
Yeah, no, I kind of understand what she's covering. But it is one of those things where it's frustrating on like a visceral level where it just doesn't make sense, especially if you look at a lot of the propaganda that the left say, whenever something crazy like that happens, well, hey, this is not all Muslims. We know that.
And no one said it was.
Yeah, but it's everybody's saying like, hey, you know, it's a religion of peace. Frankly, I don't think any major structural religion is a religion of peace. It's a religion of making money.
It's just so funny that everyone is troubled. They seem to be hovering around or they're in the middle of it. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
No, there's two things going on here. You know that film, I can't remember what film it is, Meet the Godparents or something like that, and the Circle of Trust.
Oh, yeah, the Circle of Trust.
The Circle of Trust. You're either in or you're out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And you are definitely out. Do you know what I mean? And the geezer that run over the geezers outside the mosque, you're outside as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and the geezer that threw the acid about the other night, you're outside as well. Do you know what I mean?
Really,
and all the people clicking on all these sites and learning how to do this stuff and being radicalised, you're outside as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if you're outside, we'll just round you all up. We'll get you in a position where you can't do any more damage to our country. Okay, and that's it. We'll crack on with life.
I agree with you, because I think, you know, governments are supposed to protect their citizens. That's the point of a government,
100%.
Right?
100%. Or else we'd make our own laws, yeah, wouldn't we? And we'd protect each other. And we'd, you know, I'd be on guard outside my house every night.
Yeah, I'd be cleaning my, you know,
pulling a dune stag every night.
No, is it a matter of, like, it seems to me like over the last 20 years, this political correctness has kind of come in to play where it you know, like, because everybody seems to be marginalized now, right? And the whole point of a society, right, is to get everybody on a kind of like a common denominator, like,
yeah,
okay, we're all people. That's the
yeah,
first
that's
one.
Yeah,
right? So we're all
one.
People.
Yeah.
We all want to live peaceful lives, raise our children, worship the way we want to worship, and be generally good people, right? And then when people start screwing that up, that's when we have issues. But then if everybody's saying, well, you know, I have an issue here, then we have to kind of move the bar that way, and then we have to move the bar that way. And political correctness just got to the point where you can't say what you feel anymore.
You've got a freedom of speech until you say what you want to say.
Exactly.
And then you're like, whoa, did he just say that? Well, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Actually, when you break it down and analyse it, what you said was it was actually spot on.
Yeah.
But we've made it so difficult for ourselves with all this, you know. And that unfortunately, that really happened since we became more entrenched in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's there, sort of like, it's almost as if people are trying to break down barriers to such a point in Europe that, you know, there is no flags anymore, everybody's under the same banner.
Yeah.
And if you analyse it deep enough, that's what Hitler was trying to do, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Make one race of people to act to one person. That's exactly what he was trying to do.
It's like the irony of it is, yeah, I mean, the whole thing of sovereignty, it's like you can't have everybody around the world getting along on a totally cool level now because there's so much other stuff going on. And especially when religion comes into play, because I was reading something about how more people in the United Kingdom are less religious than in the United States, right?
Yeah.
They always say they're Bible thumpers in America and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And in the UK, they said that the people who aren't particularly religious find people that are religious kind of soft in the head, like kind of dumb, frankly. That's what they
said.
I find that that's a little screwed up of a kind of, it's like a really kind of elitist idea of what people think in their hearts, you know, because people don't tell you what they feel in their hearts for fear of retribution nowadays. So it kind of goes to the point where, you know, why would I tell you what I think when you're just going to tell me that I'm wrong? So people don't tell you what they think. But when it comes to religion, the only religion that's protected vehemently by non-religious people in the UK is Islam. And I didn't understand that, because you can, for instance, pick out all that stuff that crazy magazine Charlie Hebdo did, where they're messing with the Pope and they're messing with Jewish folks, and they would do whatever they could to have a little laugh in France, and that's their gig, right? But once they started messing around with Islam, shit kicked off, you know. And especially in the UK, when we were talking before how every time something happens, someone's coming up, someone who's, you know, not particularly religious, saying, "Hey, that's a religion of peace." And you're like, "How would you know? You're not a religious
person." So where did that come from? Hang on, let's break it down. How much do you actually know about that religion? How much do you know about these people? What are the origins? Where did it come from? What's this mean? They wouldn't have a clue. Yeah, they've sort of like, everybody sort of like waved a little flag going, right, follow. It's rubbish, mate. It's rubbish.
It's crazy.
No, I mean, you know what I mean? I have nothing, you know, you can follow whatever religion you like, you can be whatever colour like, you can go to whatever church, mosque, I don't care. At the end of the day, when you step outside of that mosque into society, you're either doing it wrong or you're doing it right.
Yeah, the rules to a society, man.
There's no division to that. Do you know what I mean? What you store up, what your beliefs are, where you think you're going in your afterlife, all the rest. And that's all that religion is based on, really, is afterlife, isn't it? It's controlling your afterlife.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know what I mean?
But
it's promising you something, you know.
You know?
Hugh Hefner got it right, didn't he? He had his afterlife here, didn't he? Now he's cracked on into the real world, now, isn't he?
Stay right where you are. Don't move. Don't move a muscle. Don't move. The sniper's got you. We'll be back after this.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah. How old were you when you enlisted?
I was 18 years old.
Oh, so you were a young guy.
Four days off my 18th birthday.
Oh, yeah, because I had to get my mom's permission. She was happy to give it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Now, I think a lot of times, I talked to Mark Ormerod about kind of the idea of why people are so ambivalent to sovereignty of their country or love of country and things like that, or patriotism. It's kind of a weird word to use, patriotism. But for men like us, we learned at an early age about ourselves as people, right? Yeah. We knew what we were capable of. You probably more so than me, but when you go through stuff like when you jump out of an airplane or you are out in the field for 2 weeks and you just got to deal with what you got to deal with, it gives you a kind of an idea of self-discipline.
self-discipline.
And do you think that's lacking in a lot of the younger kids today? I know there's some that are on
point. I think it's massively lacking in a lot of people today. They're not taught it. Look, when I was a kid, all right, and it's just simple little things, all right? When I was a kid, when you had tea time, you came in when your parents told you. You sat at a table, you had your dinner, okay? If you didn't want your dinner, you still sat at the table, but you didn't have your dinner, you went to bed hungry, etc., etc., etc. Nowadays, they've got a lifestyle where they're looking at the phone half the time, they're with the mates the rest of the time, they come in when they want, they eat what they like. They don't sit at a table. There's been sort of like, I don't know if us as a generation of parents, because I'm in that generation, have been far too soft on our children. I certainly wasn't with mine, and, you know, we haven't been with ours, have we, Wendy, really? Completely soft. They probably got away with more than what we did,
yeah.
And there was a little bit of me to feel sorry for them, because I did have extremely
hard times as a kid, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But, do you know what I mean? There is a whole generation of children now that just don't seem to have those basic core values in them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And it's a real shame, and I think with just a little bit of tweaking in the way that schools approach people, they could bring that back. Yeah, I don't recall the last time I see any of my grandchildren polishing their shoes before they went to school. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't happen.
I think that's got a lot to do with the way of modern day living.
Yeah.
Because when we were young, you know, majority of our parents and our grandparents went out and did a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
9-to-5, you knew they were coming in up. Just after 5, so dinner would be on the table for 5:30. You don't have that nowadays.
And it's a throwaway society now as well.
Yeah.
You can use this and throw it away. When I the first pair of shoes I had, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They had to last for the whole year. Yeah.
I still have my first pair of Jungle Boots. I still have those.
Yeah. Nowadays you can go into Primark, do you know what I mean? And the kids pumps are this, that, and the other. Do you know what I mean? And it's like they just don't understand the value of what stuff is. It's not instilled into them, I don't think. And that might be,
as a child, when I was growing up at Christmas, we used to have things like colouring books and pens, and we really looked forward to getting those things because we never got anything throughout the year.
Yeah.
You know, if we'd, my son, you know, when he was little, he used to get games when they come out.
Yeah,
the latest game when it come out.
Yeah.
I think it's mainly our thoughts as parents. As well, you know.
Do you think it gets to the idea of when young? I'm kind of basing this on young men rather than young girls. I have a boy and a girl, but that's neither here nor there. I think when young men get to a certain age, they have to become men.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, and people say that's a bad word. No, it's not. And I think when you marginalize masculinity, you look at how the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire, when they started marginalizing masculinity, they had like David up there like this, and then David was like this after a while, and then the society fell apart because there's no one protecting the society.
Exactly, there's no one looking after it, there's nobody stood there on the front line, there's nobody defending, there's nobody there with the shield, is it? All that good stuff. I tend to find that the children that do best, and I've got one of the boxers at the club at the moment where I'm boxing the peacock, he's a young lad, the young fella, the black fella, great little boxer. Been involved with sport all his life. His family haven't got a pot to piss in, all right? But he is he's an outstanding lad. And I find that kids that have got into sport or some sort of activity outside of the school, it doesn't have to be sport necessarily, it could be a drama class or something like that, but kids that get something outside of a school, because you're there as a volunteer, i.e. to play football, you've got to put the effort in, do you know what I mean? You've got to get the bus, you've got to get, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, the other. They seem to turn out, in my opinion, the better kids.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I know that everybody isn't privileged enough to be able to do all these sorts of things because of money and restraints and that sort of stuff. But as a generalisation, kids that have the effort and make the effort to have an external activity from school seem to do a lot better than the kids that just get left to just loaf about and do their own thing.
Yeah, so what do you think about a 6-month kind of thing for kids, I guess, at a certain age, like 18, maybe?
I think it's fine. I think it should be put into children a lot earlier. I think school holidays should be encouraged into these sort of like clubs where they're brought off the streets and they can do interesting stuff. Because if it's not interesting, they don't want to do it. All they want to do is get in their phone. All they want to do is get on their Xbox. All they want to do is loaf about. There's this sort of like almost gang mentality within a lot of them now, that nobody fights mano-a-mano, everybody cheap shots. It's rubbish.
But I think also the other thing is, you know, for children to do sport, it's quite a costly thing for a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got to have the latest football boots or, you know, whatever sport they do, it costs a lot of money. And a lot of families just can't afford that.
No, I did say that. You know,
I've noticed that it's the same thing in America as it is over here. A lot of people who join the military are of not well means. They're kind of like lower income people because that's they see as like, oh, this could be a career that I could get out of this neighborhood and do something with my life that further on in the world I can actually learn a trade. I can have some, you know, self respect. I can get out of this godforsaken neighborhood, especially where I was. And you know, when you see like those gangs, they're like postcode gangs, they call them, or something, like they run around with the acid, throwing the other kids. I mean, the thing is, there's no consequence to this kind of bullshit behavior.
No, they're getting away with it, yeah. And they're getting away with it on
this. If one of our children did that, they would just be in serious trouble.
Yeah.
But you know, but society makes it difficult as well for parents to punish their children, because when we was younger,
I'm surprised my dad's trousers ever stayed up the amount of times he had his belt off. Do you know what I mean?
If you got into trouble down the street and a policeman saw you, if he didn't hit you, your parents would. Now your parents are told you're not allowed to hit your children.
They can't tell them off in school. They can't discipline them. They're not allowed to give them a simple thing like detention without sort of like all.
So with the idea of they can't have external discipline, it kind of relieves. It puts the burden now on the child to instill self-discipline, right?
And that's
not going to happen with the way you're talking about.
Not if he's not shown. Yeah. I mean, one of the regimental, the second thing in the regimental ethos for the SAS is self-discipline, right? It's unrelenting pursuit of excellence, and the second one is self-discipline. And self-discipline, no matter whether you're a soldier or a civilian, if you've got no self-discipline, you've got no will to crack on, you've got no will to formulate, and it's just the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, discipline for me was instilled when I was like 17, but it was like a little voice in my head, it was like, you know what the right thing is. You know what the right thing is.
Yeah.
So you either choose not to do the right thing, but you know you're letting yourself down, or you do the right thing.
Yeah.
And it's that little voice that I think young people, especially in this day and age where things are a lot more complicated than when we were young, need that more than ever, where they have that voice that they can trust. Because as young guys, we trusted ourselves to do things.
Yeah.
Because we had to. And it seems like if people are living vicariously through their phones, or thinking what the Kardashians are doing is living, you know, it just kind of it puts a real weird slant on
stuff.
It's
funny you should say that, right? Because the media thing plays a massive. There's a program, and I can't remember what it's called on television. One of our kids was watching it quite religiously, and it's all based around children taking the mickey out of adults, and the child always wins, and it's like the dad always carries the bags to the car, and he always loses, and it's just bullshit.
Yeah.
You get the back of my hand, you know what I mean? That's it. That's your lot. You fucking cross me, you get the back of my hand, and that's it. And that's not being harsh. I'd sooner clout my child than have him run in front of a car.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line of it, do you know what I mean? And if you can't read into that, do you know what I mean? It's not bullying, it's not stupid, it's discipline. It's disciplining my children in such a way that when they grow up, I used to say to my son, have a little word with yourself before you do something, cuntish. Yeah. Right? Have a little word with yourself and say to yourself, if my dad was stood on my shoulders now, not the devil, because I'm worse than the devil when it comes to you, son, have a little word with yourself, and with dad be going, yeah, go on, Perry, have a go. Or would he be saying, you dare, you little twat, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you fucking know, you know which fool's stood on your shoulders, son, do you know what I mean?
So, with that said, do you think that, like, I guess mandatory military service would be that person to give that kid that voice in his head?
I think it can, but I don't think that sort of like just a short, sharp shock 6 months would do it. I think it needs to be drip-fed in from sort of like from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? From almost kindergarten, they need to be sort of starting to learn what's wrong. They get their asses mopped at kindergarten now. Do you know what I mean?
I got really young kids.
Tommy, do you know what I mean? Oh dear, Tommy feels sick. Well, Tommy can sit there half an hour. Mm. Unless he's projectile vomiting, he's in this class. You know what I mean? And that's it.
Do you remember when you were at school and you had sports day? Mm-hmm. I absolutely excelled in running. I was super fast. And it really was one thing that I was really good at.
Mm-hmm.
And when you won a race, you know, everyone was like, oh, wow, wow, wow. Now, oh, no, everybody's a winner. Well,
yeah, they run into the line, they stopped them short, and they all step over together.
I was telling my son this, that he had a sports day, and he won a race. And he was like, yeah, I won the race, but everybody got a trophy. I was like, bullshit, son.
Yeah.
He was like, what do you mean? I go, that's not how the world works.
It's almost even bigger.
It's almost like you have to kind of educate them against what they're learning in school. Like, yeah, I understand. He's like, well, you know, everybody, no one wants to feel left out. I go, well, life is. Someone wins and someone loses. Yeah. So that's why you try to excel and win, you know?
And if everybody's a winner, so why aren't we all getting A's?
And they do see it. They do see it.
No, they're not stupid.
They do see it. Does the Premier League, does everybody win a trophy? No. So three teams get relegated every year, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's in society. It's not like we're teeing them up for something that's suddenly going to knock them over the edge.
Yeah, participation trophies,
Does the geezer that closes the deal, does he get the money? Or does the bloke that didn't put the effort in, does he get the money? Mm. No. So they're teeing them up the wrong way for life, aren't they?
It's displacing reality, right? So you're saying, the world's like this until you become an adult, and then it's different.
Yeah.
So what's the whole point of raising?
That's what it seems to be about. All these left wingers just seem to be, right, I'm the sick, lame and lazy, but you owe me a living.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid we don't. You've got to get on with it. We don't mind helping you out a little bit. We'll get you on your feet even. But at some stage, you've got to be accountable for your own actions, and you've got to actually get amongst this stuff and start doing stuff for yourself.
I think that's the key thing. People do things for themselves. They take pride in what they do because they actually have something that they achieved. If they just know that they can sit on their ass and get a trophy or get benefits or whatever their problem is, get paid to do nothing, that's just what society's
going to
be. You're
going to be a product to that, aren't you?
Yeah, and that's.
And why would you put the effort in if it was just handed to you if you were that way inclined?
We're making it easy for them, aren't we?
You know, what I found really disturbing was I was reading something about, you know, they have transgender disorder, the stuff where they, well, I don't know if that's the correct way to say it. They have people who, throughout history, have been boys that want to be girls or girls that want to be boys. But it's like a very small percentage of the human population in history or whatever, right? But now it seems. I was reading about this guy who had a kid who was a LA Lakers fan, and it was a jersey that's purple and yellow. And the kid drew a picture of himself, and the jersey's kind of like, you know, like a jersey, like a vest, right?
There's no sleeves, and
it kind of came down long. He drew a picture of himself in this jersey, and the teacher was like, "Oh, he's transgender." And the father's like, "No, he's not transgender. He's wearing a Lakers jersey. He wears it at home. He likes basketball." He's like, no, that's a dress. And the father was like, no, that's my son, and he's not wearing a dress, he's wearing a basketball jersey, like, please don't be transphobic. And the father's like, whoa, I'm not being transphobic. And then eventually what happened is the school brought him up on charges or something for being transphobic to his kid. And like, this thing's happening in the United States more than anywhere else, because the United States is very self-indulgent with this bullshit, is that they try to say, you know, that's something that may be a disorder. It has to be accepted by everybody. When they say, like, someone, like, if I say, guys, I'm a girl now, you have to call me she.
Or
it's illegal.
But my son was telling me, Warwick University, this is learned people at Warwick University. This is supposed to be the cream of the crop as far as, you know, it's the same sort of league as Oxford and Cambridge, right? Okay? Warwick University in the UK. They have free toilets now. They have a male, a female, and one for people who can't make up their mind what they are. I mean, come on. Come on, you're either sitting up or you're standing up,
and you're not bust. But I mean, before this thing kind of came to light, there was always dudes that were going in the ladies' room, and there were always ladies that were going to dudes' room, but no one made a big deal out of it. It was just what it was.
You need a trough or a bucket, and that's it. You know what I mean?
And it seems, seems like it's kind of like, it's really self-indulgent, and I think it kind of lends itself to what we were talking about before, where everybody is really privileged in their security and existence now. There's going to be some kind of really heavy conflict at some point in the future between humans and nations and things like that. But it seems like people almost forgot about World War II and what fascists really are.
And that really grates me. You know what I mean? I've always said to people, this planet does not belong to us. We hold on to it for a small time and we pass it on to our children, right? And they inherit it and then they pass it on to their children. So for the amount of time that we've had it so far, we've made a fucking mess of it, haven't we, really? Do you know what I mean? And you think about all those people who fought for this to go exactly against what's happening right now, you know? And they put their lives on line. And all that blood that was spilt and all those, you know, that we call them our glorious dead, all those people, it's in the millions over the period of those two wars. It just seems to be, well, so what?
That's ancient history,
and that's what, you know, you had that MP the other day calling to, no, we need to take down Nelson's column, he's a racist.
Yeah,
he's a racist. He had a couple of people working in his garden, so what? Do you know what I mean? He gave him a job. He actually probably gave him an improved life compared to the one they had.
If anything, I think
ridiculous.
Yeah, England was far more progressive when it came to racism and slavery than the rest of the world. I mean, we had problems like that in the United States where they were taking down Confederate statues and things like that, and then they were talking about taking down the Washington Monument in Washington.
Yeah, that's right. This is where it stemmed from. It's come across the pond, didn't it?
And it just seems like, you know, don't you guys have anything else? Isn't something more pressing in your life that you could just go, you know what, I want to get really esoteric and go, you know, maybe that guy's a racist. And that's what people do. They do these words, like they call people Nazis now. If you don't agree with me, you're a Nazi. But calling someone a Nazi, say 40 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, was like, that was a big freaking deal. Now people are calling people racist and Nazis, and I don't even know what a xenophobe is. I haven't looked it up. But I imagine it's not good, you know?
Anything with phobe on you've had it. You're down the pan.
When it came to something, I was talking to a friend of mine who, he's a Sikh, right? I grew up with this dude, right? He's from New York. He talks like me, right? He's a Sikh. And I was like, he said to me, he's like, are you Islamophobic? And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know what? I'm a Sikh and I'm scared of Muslims. So that makes me Islamophobic. And I was like, well, I guess, you know, if I see a dude with a backpack kind of sweating, wearing a winter coat and it's the middle of summer, I'm probably going to be scared. Probably going to go the other way.
That's what Alan Snack bar is.
And as much as, you know, like, you know, I think as military guys, we always try to find the humor in really dark situations because that's where we live. You know, we don't want to sit there and cry the whole day long. But when it comes to things like that, it just seems like everybody's really easy to dash what we call it free speech in America, right? And that whole thing was like, free speech is cool unless it really bugs me, and then I don't want you to say it. But that's not what these glorious dead fought for. I mean, if the Germans had won, it would have been a lot like the people are saying it is now, which it isn't. You know, they're like, you can't think, you know, you can't think a certain way. I mean, it's like everybody cites that book 1984 with George Orwell about thought police and all that stuff. That's what's happening now, where people are changing history. They're going, oh yeah, like they'll pull down that thing because we want you to think that that's what happened. But if you forget your past, you're going to repeat it. And that's the thing I think a lot with World War II and how Europe structured. It's a lot of I think a lot of people don't want to realize that violence did solve a lot of problems here in Europe. I mean, as far as fighting the Nazis, if they weren't fighting the Nazis, they were.
But conflict is part of life, unfortunately, yeah. And I wouldn't mind betting if you went back in time, if you were religious, the first thing Adam and Eve did, you know, was have a fight. You know, and then argued about something. Yeah, course, do you know what I mean? So it's there. It's ingrained in us. It's entrenched. When one man's got a fought, another man's going to have a different thought, and that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But to now sort of like alienate everybody and say that you can't stand up for your principles, that's wrong. Do you know what I mean? I can't say Britain is great anymore. I cannot say, you know, I love my country without somebody turning around and saying, hey, you're racist, Phil. Yeah. Oh, Phil, no, that's outrageous.
Yeah, look at all the things that your country did over the years.
Yeah, yeah,
look
yeah,
at all the
yeah,
positive
yeah.
things. That's the thing. And also you see, you know, a lot of young people being taught how bad the country that they live in is, but not under the auspice of we can make it better, but over there, like, it's terrible. Think of all the good things that, you know, the fact that Western society is pretty much the most enlightened society in human history. Of course, it took some bad shit to get there, but
you know, look what technology has afforded you to do. Look at the educations you've got now. Mm-hmm. Look at the way you were looked after. Look at the way the health system. You know, the average life expectancy now is probably well up above the 70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it used to be down in the 40s.
Well,
years
yeah, well,
ago,
last
you know
generation
I mean?
Was in the 60s.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like,
so, you know, you're getting a longer life. You're getting a better life. But unfortunately, some people are making it their damnedest to give us a worse life.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, and we're being beat with this stick all the time, whereby you can't say what you want, you can't stand up for what's true. And like I said, if you strip everything out, if you strip race out, religion out, colour out, sexuality out, there's two types of people in this world. There's wrong'uns and there's right'uns.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
That's totally on point.
Do you know what I mean? And that's, you know, I can't get my head around anybody who can't think like that, because you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Well, you're actually part of the problem.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the individual. I thought was really important, right, when I was growing up. It's like how you approach your place in society. But now with, like they call it identity politics, which essentially means that you are now not Phil, you are a white guy. So that means you hang out with all the other white guys, which you probably don't get along with most of the other white guys, but now you're part of that crew. And it's like this identity politics that strips away the individuality and puts you in this big kind of group, be it if you're a black guy, you're just with all the black guys, or if you're a gay person, you're with all the gay people. And I think that's, if anything, that's a lot, that's like, it's the bad parts of communism that I think they're trying
to... That's horrendous. I treat everybody as an individual. Mm-hmm. You are a person, do you know what I mean? Until you, and I don't care. Like I said, I've always said, I don't care what colour, race, creed, religion, do you know what I mean? You're a person, and I'll take you at face value. Mm-hmm. You're another person, not myself, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have to sort of like knowing you for 5 minutes, you turn out to be a twat.
Yeah.
Then that's my opinion of you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think that's great. One of the things I like about what you do on social media and when you get on the news and stuff like that is you speak your mind, and the fact that you're not apologetic about it, because a lot of people, like, even if for instance that lady, that MP from Kensington, I think it was, said some bad shit about Prince Harry.
What a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah,
what a stupid thing,
but just uneducated dumb shit. Yeah. Right, but then she
sits in the back of a plane going vroom vroom.
Yeah,
no,
that's just
no.
That's, yeah, stupid.
That's what he did at
but then once people were like, hey, you know, that's really dumb, she was like, you know what, I'm really sorry. But if you heard what she said in the first part, she wasn't sorry at all.
No,
right?
Of course she's not. She's sorry because public opinion wants her to be sorry.
So we as the rest of the public have to go, you know what, she did apologize, it's okay. But if that came from the right about someone on the left, like if someone says something bad about Jeremy Corbyn right? Yeah. Like he was, you know, whatever, terribly aloof or whatever.
Yeah,
people be like, hey, like,
I'll say it how he's like, he's a terrorist.
Exactly. So you say,
and I'm not apologizing ever.
I know. Right? So you say, Corbett's a terrorist, right? They'd be like, Big Phil needs to, he needs to apologize. He'd be like, no, fuck you, I'm not going to apologize.
And
you could see them just getting furious. They'd be like, but that's terrible. You need to be hung for that. But
so now you're the aggressor. You want to hang me. You want to inflict violence on me. Yeah. You know what I mean? You've taken it a step up.
So really quick to just dissolve the idea of dialogue and get right into the schematics of how they're going to destroy you. And I think that's just crazy, man. Where it's just, what's good for the goose is not good for
which
the gander.
Which is almost, you know, if the right wing did it, if the right wing said, right, we're out on the streets, we're going to throw some bricks around, we're going to kill people.
Yeah. We're going to kick some banks in. It'll be over, man.
Dairy me.
Troops on the streets, man. You know,
look at the Brexit riots they had, right. You know what I mean, with the thing. Straight on the streets, and if you stood up and you said, no, and you waved the Union Jack in front of them, they were actively plotting how they just stamp your face into the curb.
The one thing I never really got is in America, people put their flag up, and that's all. It's the flag, right? If you put your flag up in England, people second guess, like, why does that guy got his flag up? Is he like one of those National Front guys? Or, you know, I don't get that. I don't know where that started. Do you know where it started?
I think it's a product of a couple of things. We did have some race issues here, and unfortunately, the people that were perpetrating those race stuff in the National Front and that, they hid behind our flag.
Yeah.
They hid behind the Union Jack, okay? Coupled with the name that the football hooligans got later on, you know, they were all behind the flag. So every time somebody saw things being smashed up, every time there was a bit of aggro, every time there was racial tension, every time there was a fight, there was a flag involved, all right? So now, I think people who are sort of like more moderate would be tentative to sort of like say, I'll tell you what, I'll wave the flag, but it'll only be a little one. I don't want to be seen to be shoving this great big thing outside my house because, you know, that might get me labelled as well. But it's wrong. That is absolutely wrong. Yeah. I mean,
they I'm proud of the flag. It,
you know,
like,
I signed the dotted line, I cooked the Queen's shilling, and I vowed to defend country, you know, flag and Queen and monarchy and people, etc. So that flag is very much a part of my life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if I'd get the biggest one I could on the front of my house, I really would. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it doesn't make me racist at all. It just means I'm somebody who stepped into the breach for this country. You know, I've fought for this country, literally. Do you know what I mean? So I don't see why I shouldn't be proud of it.
I agree with you, man. I think you're a patriot for that. I mean, and it's weird because you use words like patriot and people kind of think you're crazy. You know, and I never really got that. And you know, I'm a 49-year-old guy, right? So I'm not a kid, but I speak to a lot of young people and they seem really ambivalent about their nationality and they're just kind of like, yeah, I mean, a lot of young kids are just like, oh, yeah, we're part of Europe and stuff like that. Well, yeah, in a way, but you are British, you're English, you know. And the fact that, like, in America, everybody's like an Irish-American or an Italian-American or a Puerto Rican-American.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would always be arguing, like, you're an American-Puerto Rican. You're an American-Irishman, that kind of thing.
Yeah, 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 which is right.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, that's the correct term to use, right? I mean, it's more accurate that if you're a citizen of a country, you should have a little bit of respect for the country, at least enough to see past a lot of the, you know.
You know, that's one of my arguments here. You know, you're willing to take the benefits. You're willing to you know, sit back and receive your gyro or your check, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a flip side to the flag waving, and, you know, this is where you can have your cake and eat it again in this country. That if you want to go to the last night of the proms in the Albert Hall, where all the posh people go and there's some nice music, you can wave your flag all night again. And there's not a single person to call you a racist ever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there is this sort of like, it's almost like it's a class thing as well.
Yeah.
If you come from a council estate and you open your mouth, it's fine. If you it's completely out of order.
Yeah.
Right. If you come from Eton and you open your mind, that was a bit adventurous. Do you know what I mean? And there is that thing where you know, you're a thug if you're poor.
Yeah.
You're slightly overactive if you're rich. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And there is that thing with this country as well.
That's something I didn't really realize until I started living here a lot, that there is like this big class thing.
Yeah.
And it seems like anywhere where, you know, a lot of the rich people like to keep the poor people fighting amongst themselves, so they keep doing what they're doing.
Exactly, and that's why I say that, and that's why there's sort of like what I call Greenbelt England that never sees the problems.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand what it's like, you know, scrabbling for work, not having work. So with this immigration thing, it's not racist. Mm-hmm. I don't hate these people that are coming over. I'm saying stop them coming in because there's too many here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We haven't got enough jobs to go around. We haven't got enough facilities to go around. We haven't got enough housing to go around.
That's
all right.
True.
So when Jeremy Corbyn's in there and he's promising everybody, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, you can have where are you going to get the money for that, son?
Yeah, you're going to have to tax everybody.
We're going to strip the armed forces down so we can't defend ourselves and then they can all run in.
Yeah, I saw somebody taking the whole fast, quick reaction force, Royal Marines out.
Yeah, 1,000 troops. Oh, yeah. We'll just take 1,000 troops out. Do you know what I mean? That's all right, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? We'll do their job for them, shall we?
Wow.
I mean, really, the people that, some of these people that are making policy, they're doing it just for the votes and just for the here and now.
Yeah.
There's no longer look at the bigger picture. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it really
is. Lack of strategy, I imagine, right?
There is, yeah, yeah. From my point of view anyway, you know? And I remember speaking years ago to an old, he's an old man now, but he was a brigadier when I was just joining the army. Mm-hmm. And he became a general. Not going to mention his name. But he said, I was only young, I was about 18 years old, and we had to do this thing whereby we was his escort. Mm-hmm. And it was just basically to give the young soldiers an idea, a look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And we went on an exercise up in Scotland with him, and we shadowed him everywhere we went. And I was just about to do a tour of Northern Ireland. And I said to him, I said, sir, I said, you know, we're about to go on a trip to Northern Ireland. I said, I've been trying to do a bit of research about the place, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I said, look, why don't we end this thing? Why are we doing this? And he said, son, he said, it's one of the best training grounds in the world. He said, at the moment, he said, you're over there, you're getting continual operations, you're getting continual experience of being, you know, in a hostile environment. He said, and one day, he said, there'll be troops on the streets of the UK. And that was years ago. That's always stuck with me because, you know, all right, they keep sort of like up and down in it at the moment, you know what I mean? We get severe and the troops go on the streets. But there will come a day where the troops have seriously got to defend what we've got on our own streets.
Yeah, that's
and that will happen.
Yes.
And that will happen. And I'm telling you, you know, that's not, you know, this, I think we've gone past gripping this now.
Yeah,
I think we've got to sort of like ease ourselves in at least slow enough that we can try and at least control it because it's gone too far.
It does seem to me, and I like sometimes I think I'm just being a pessimist, but it seems to me like it has gotten out of hand to the point where only something really heavy-handed will put it back in the hand.
And that's the problem, because we've played into this thing whereby we've been so soft, we've been encouraged to be so soft, everybody accepts soft now, that when you stand up to it, and when you decide that you've got to be firm, everyone goes, oh, that's awful, that's shocking, you can't do that. And you're like, well, hang on a minute.
That's way too aggressive.
Yeah, yet people seem still content to look at places like Barcelona and see dead children on the streets.
Yeah, and hashtag saying our thoughts are with you, which is bullshit. That doesn't change a thing.
It's just bollocks.
Yeah, it doesn't change a thing.
It's absolute, it's a nothing statement.
Yeah.
You've got to stand up and do something about it, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, people are getting it. I'm doing this march with the FLA, the Football Lads Alliance, who they've had enough. Well, these are normal blokes. These are, you know, red top reading people that sit in their homes and they're scared.
Yeah.
They don't know what way to turn. And I had it with some geezer the other night who was trying to say to me, well, what do you want to do? Live in a police state, blah, 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 and everybody screwed down. And I said to him, what do you want to do? Live in a state where nobody cares and they kill people left, right and centre? Because I'd sooner see an extra policeman on the street than an extra dead body.
I'd sooner see a platoon of Marines on the street than
every
dead children.
Every day!
You know,
I just came back from Brussels. Let's go back to Brussels. I got off in the train station and there was troops everywhere. And I thought to myself,
I'm
happy with this. Do you know what I mean? It's, I don't want to see it forever.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But while there's grief, let's get some troops on. If you looked at the Great Wars, okay, you know, World War II, did Winston Churchill worry about his tourism policy? Did Winston Churchill worry about his foreign policy?
To visit,
Churchill said, I will throw every swinging dick and all his gear at this fucking Nazis until we've sorted it out.
Yeah.
And then I can still just stamp on it until I know it's then, and then we'll stamp on it a few more times, and then we can move on with our lives. And that's what he did. He won the war. Mm-hmm. He went, sure, the war was won. You know, it carried on. We even got to the stage where we had to drop a couple of nukes, okay? Mm-hmm. But it was extinguished, right? The Nazis lost. He made sure they were gone, and then he stepped down. There you go. Now crack on with your fucking holidays. And what happened? We went through the 50s, all the fashion came in, all the 60s, and everyone was fucking each other, and it was great for a couple of years, you know what I mean? And that's the way life works, you know what I mean? But you can't have that without sacrifice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You cannot have a good life without making sacrifice, because there unfortunately are people out there that don't want the same things as we want, that haven't got the same values, and just want to come over here and do different to what we want to do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
I feel like you said the word sacrifice.
Yeah.
I think that's key to what people have to understand. To live in a free society, you have to make sometimes personal sacrifices to make things safer. And I just think
And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, it's a giveaway society. Well, they don't understand what sacrifice is.
Yeah, because it's so
because it's always just been given to them. Yeah, have this, have that. And all the freeloaders are, you know, oh, I want free education, I want this education, I want that. No. If you're good enough, you'll get an education, and you'll learn it, but you'll learn it with hard work.
Yeah.
You won't learn it by just sitting there going, oh, I should have that. Because that ain't the way it works, you know what I mean?
Well, dude, I appreciate you taking the time to hang with me, man.
Yeah, no.
And good luck with the remembrance. Yeah, that's going to be good, man. I'm going to try to come by and see some guys.
Yeah, no, please do. For people out there, look on my social media, at Phil Campion, okay, you'll get all the details for Remembrance Rumble. I promise you, it's more than just a night of boxing. There's all sorts going on. We're going to raise money and awareness for some real decent veterans charities, and the Yanks are coming over, and it's going to be fun. All right, so yeah, please come.
Cool, thanks, man.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate it. Okay, don't say I didn't warn you. Did you keep up? Did that wake you up in your commute? I hope so. Now, Phil's a very genuine dude and doing some great things to take care of British vets, and it was good to spend some time with him. And he's out there sharing his opinions loud and proud, and whether you agree with him or not, I think we need a little bit more of that. People being sheep ain't going to help nobody's thing. So because I like to keep you on your toes, we're slowing down the vibes again for next week's episode. I want to talk to DJ Crust, iconic drum and bass DJ and producer in his own right, and part of the Represent Collective with Ronnie Size and also DJ Die. Crust also shares another passion of mine, CBD. So we get into that as well. Until next time, my peoples, you know, stay classy.